From listener-supported KTOO, welcome to Juno Afternoon, broadcasting live from the homelands of the Occoquan and on demand as a podcast. It's Friday, July 12th, and I'm your host, Andy Klein. Gunashish, thank you for joining the conversation. And on today's show, the Delta Music Makers are a Canadian community band that will be sharing the stage with the Juno community band this Sunday. We're going to hear all about that. The Occman Triathlon is happening August 4th, and it has multiple levels, sprint, Olympic, and long distance, so you have no excuse not to give it a try. But if you're not ready for that, you can at least volunteer, and we'll hear how in just a moment. We're going to check in with the Last Chance Mining Museum to see how their summer's going and what's happening up Gold Creek. And this is the last weekend of Theatre Alaska's Pride and Prejudice. We're going to talk to a few of the actors, locals and out-of-towners, that have been making that happen. Those conversations coming up in this hour on a Juno Afternoon.
Support for Juno Afternoon comes from Heritage Coffee Roasting Company, providing Juno with locally roasted coffee for over 40 years, with cafes and drive-through locations throughout Juno. More at heritagecoffee.com.
KTOO would like to acknowledge that we broadcast from the homelands of the Occoquan. The Kliné Di have stewarded this area for thousands of years. And today our studios sit on a spot that was once part of the tidelands and is now covered over with buildings, roads, and parking lots. And we recognize those families who traveled to and from these tidelands to fishing and hunting grounds and to gatherings in other villages and still cherish it as an important part of their way of life for today and for future generations.
Hansen Gress, Ka eat with the Shu Yi, we Kashuk a eat in. Jin Katka K Jin Tauk, Anakaya Haanikak, Gunshish.
Welcome to Juno Afternoon, community-supported KTOO. Thanks for joining me. And today we're going to be talking about the Delta Music Makers. You're listening to Juno Afternoon on KTOO 104.3 and KAUK 91.7 and online at KTOO.org. This Sunday, the Juno community bands are sharing the stage with a Canadian community band called the Delta Music Makers. They hail from Delta, British Columbia, and they're on a cruise that will bring them to a few Southeast communities to share their love of music. Juno Afternoon's Boston Christopher talked with them earlier this week in preparation for their Alaskan tour.
And I'm here now with Jandy Jansen and Kurt Jansen, who are from the Delta Music Makers, and also Sarah McNair Grove, who is the president of the Juno Community Bands, which we know and love. And I want to start with you, Sarah, first. How did this connection come up with the Delta Music Makers?
Well, actually, about a year ago, Kurt contacted us and said they were going to be cruising through Southeast Alaska. And I guess they saw us on Facebook and on our website and said, would we be interested in playing a concert with them? And we talked about it and said, well, doesn't that sound like fun to have an American band and a Canadian band give a concert? And so we met and talked, and here we are.
So, Kurt, just like you are the conductor of the Delta Music Makers, and you have been for, is it over 20 years?
40.
40 years.
Yeah.
That is amazing. And just like the Juno Community Band, the Delta Music Makers is a community band. Can you tell us about how it got started?
Yeah, my wife and I said, you know what, I'm a band teacher, a high school band teacher, and we always have adults that said, I wish I had learned to play a saxophone, you know, and we said, let's just get them together and we'll start a night school course and we'll tell them they have to pay. And we started the band and they had so much fun.
Oh.
That it just developed, it grew and grew, both in size and quality. And since that beginning, we've performed in many places around the world.
Now, I saw on your website that you plan these trips every few years to go and take the community band, well, the Delta Music Makers, which is a community band,
That's correct. You're
called the Delta Music Makers. And you've gone to like Hungary and you've gone all over the world. And how do you choose the places that you're going to go?
Well, that's a great question. when we're thinking about somewhere exotic that we'd like to perform, I just make some inquiries and like, for instance, Alaska.
Right. There you go. I was going to say it's probably wherever Jandy wants to go. Now, Jandy, are you in the group as well?
Yes, I played tuba for 40 years, but now I'm learning percussion. So I mostly play bass drum and triangle and that kind of thing.
I guess it's easier not to have to take the tuba around the world, probably, right?
Well, I don't know. My bass drum is pretty big.
So does the band bring all of the instruments with them?
Yes. Yeah. We borrow what we can on site.
But, like a piano or something like that.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. But yeah. We have everything on board the ship that we need.
And how many members are in the Delta Music Makers?
Well, there's 55 at home, but I have 36 on this cruise.
On Sunday, you're going to be here in Juneau at the Juneau Arts and Culture Center, as we said, and you're going to be performing with the Juneau Community Band, which I think is cool. And so you're each going to play a few songs, or how is it going to work, Sarah?
Well, we're working out those official details, but we think they're going to play a piece. We're going to play a piece. They're going to play a piece. We're going to play a piece. And we're going to end up with this beautiful Delta Music Makers. We're probably going to have 80 people playing. It's going to be great. Oh, my gosh.
That is going to be amazing. That is going to be so fun. And then on Wednesday next week, if you are hearing this interview, you can let people know they're going to be in Ketchikan with members of the Ketchikan community band. Yeah. So that's going to be kind of cool.
Yep.
And so technically, are you on a cruise right now?
Yeah. Yes. We're on the Celebrity Summit.
2 weeks.
Oh, you're okay. So you're on a Celebrity Summit cruise. Are you doing concerts on the ship?
Unofficial.
Unofficial.
Yeah. Don't tell Celebrity.
No. Okay. You just show up at the bar and maybe there's going to be people playing
practicing.
We've got the conference rooms and those are ours for the entire 14 days.
Okay.
Because we're doing a back-to-back cruise, northbound and southbound. So we've just kind of passed a message around saying that we are doing an open rehearsal.
I see. I see. And then people can come and watch if they want to.
That's
yeah,
correct.
Yeah, yeah. So that's so cool that it's been around for 40 years. And then I do want to ask about this cool thing that you do, which you started, I guess, about 20 years ago.
The Ladner Bandfest.
Yeah. Tell me about that.
Yeah. Well, when I retired from teaching in 2003, I just had this idea that we could get some community bands together. And I phoned a couple of friends and said, could you bring your band on Sunday and we'll play together? We'll have, say, 40 minutes each to perform. And it turned out to be so much fun. And we had quite an audience. And the next year we had 8 bands that wanted to come. And then subsequently, we've had 22, as many as 22 bands from around Vancouver area.
Oh, that is amazing. Now, do you ever invite, could the Juneau Community Band go down to Delta and be there if they wanted to be part of it?
Absolutely.
I think that would be really cool. We're creating international community bandship here.
We already have Washington State send a band. They've had 3 or 4 different bands come from Washington State.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. And for those who don't know, we should mention that Delta is in British Columbia. You said it's just south of Vancouver. Is that right?
Yep. Just north of the border, the U.S. border and south of Vancouver.
So people have probably gone through it when they've gone up to Vancouver, if they've ever driven
up there. Vancouver Island, possibly.
Vancouver Island.
Certainly, if they've gone to Vancouver Island, they've passed right through Delta.
Yeah. Yeah. That's amazing. And you have both been there your whole lives, or?
Yes.
Now, Jandy, what's the best thing about a community band?
Well, it's just really fun. We have lots of parties and we travel all over.
He's supposed to talk about the music.
And we play.
I like Jandy. I like where her head's at.
We play a lot of really fun music, things people want to hear, you know, musicals and traditional, songs from different parts of the world and
movie music.
So, and we try and keep it happy music, so everybody enjoys coming.
Yeah, that is really great.
And we're quite elderly.
Well, that's what I was going to ask about, is that there must be the opportunity, because I know, like in the Juneau Community Band, there's people all ages in there. But I'm sure for touring purposes, it's maybe harder for a younger person who's in their 20s or 30s who has a day job to go on a 2-week cruise necessarily. But but your band is open to anybody. How do you get recruit new members?
Yes. Well, I think it's a problem for most bands that I know of, because we're all getting elderly, and to get younger people in seems to be a bit of a struggle. And I'm not sure why, because most of the high schools in our area have fabulous music programs. So, as I'm sure there are here. And so you would think there's lots of musicians coming out of high schools and they would look for a place to play. You know, I think what you alluded to, that they get college and they get a career, and it takes quite a while before their life settles down to the point where they could join a band again.
Right. Yeah. And of course, everybody knows the Juneau Community Band because we just saw them in the 4th of July parade in both downtown and in Douglas. It was wonderful to see the marching band out doing its thing.
It's great. We have
that
fun.
That was so cool. And to have another concert so soon because of the opportunity that this is creating must be great for the people in the band.
It is great because we don't do a lot over the summer because, as you know, in Juneau, people travel and they go outside. And so this is sort of a busy summer for us, but we've had a lot of people respond, and we're going to have maybe 30 players in our band. We had 55 for the 4th of July concert. Great. But a lot of them have disappeared, you know, in the sense that, you know, they've gone out of town now. So but we still have a good group of folks playing with us.
That is so cool. Yeah. Well, the Delta Music Makers are going to be in Juneau this Sunday at 3 p.m. And how do people get tickets, or do they need tickets?
It's free.
It's free.
So just come on down to the Jack.
That's amazing. I'm sure there'll be a little donation cup or something available.
There is, but just come anyway.
Just come. It's the Jack, and it'll be at the Juneau Arts and Culture Center at 3 p.m. on Sunday. And if you're going to be in Ketchikan next week, you can let people know, or let your people know, that they're also going to be there Wednesday, July 17th at noon, as they're sort of cruising around Alaska. And have you been able to get out in Juneau today at all?
Well, we went up the aerial tram.
Okay. Yeah.
Up the gold tram, I think it's called.
Yeah.
And that was great. Wow. That's beautiful views up there.
It's a nice day.
With our three youngest members, our drummer, she's 19.
Oh, so see, you've got some young folks in your band.
Our two percussionists, one's 20 and her sister's 26.
Yeah, but they're our granddaughters. I'm not sure if that counts.
But they are in the band.
That's one way to get other people.
That's how you get members. You just have grandchildren.
And the, exactly. The other young girl is our assistant conductor's daughter.
So, nice. Yeah. Okay. Well, that is how it works. You know, I love that. And I do want to ask, so you have your own march that you created, right? Is the Delta Music Makers March? Tell
That's
me a little
it,
bit
exactly.
about that.
Yes. Yeah. Well, two members of our band are pretty good composers. And they said, what about if we write a piece? I said, well, make it a march because, you know, that's what I like. That's what we like playing. And they're not on this trip, unfortunately, so I can't introduce them to the audience, but I can still tell the story. And they worked on this collaboration for about a year, and this was about 3 years ago that they created it. And we play it at every concert.
I was going to say, is it a staple of the concert?
You got it. Yeah. Now they've changed the name. They've taken the word Delta out, so it's just Music Makers March, and it's available through Hal Leonard Publishing.
Oh, so anybody can play.
Exactly.
Well, I'm sure the Juneau Community Band is going to learn it a little bit this week.
We're going to learn it and play. That's the one piece that we're going to play with this huge massed band. So it's going to be fun.
There are going to be like 60, 70, 80 people there playing the band. That's going to be really cool. All right. Well, thank you so much, Kurt. Janny, I'll let you get back to your tourism situation. Go enjoy this lovely weather. Sarah, is there anything that we should be knowing about, looking out for coming up? What's the next thing after this for the Juneau Community
after
Band?
After this, we're going to probably have a little break for the summer. And we'll have a concert early November for our fall concert.
Fall concert in November. Okay. Yeah. So again, it's the Delta Music Makers playing along with the Juneau Community Bands. It is going to be at the Juneau Arts and Culture Center on this Sunday, July 14th at 3 p.m. Don't miss it. It's free. No cost to the public. And it sounds like it's going to be a wonderful, wonderful concert and a wonderful day.
I think it will be. Thank you for having us.
I appreciate that. Guns, cheese for coming in today.
Thank you very much.
You're listening to Juno Afternoon on community-supported KTOO. I'm Andy Klein, and joining me now from the Aukman Triathlon is Daniel Wiersma. Daniel, thanks so much for coming in.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
It's absolutely great to have you here, and great to know the Aukman Triathlon is good and going, and also lots of added cool stuff happening with it. So let's talk about, first of all, it's happening on August 4th.
That is correct. August 4th, it's going to be an all-day event this year. Because in large part, we've added longer distances. So,
tell me about that. Yeah.
Yep. So starting early, people will be in the water as early as 6:30 in the morning.
Oh, boy.
Everybody should be out of the water by about 8:20. And then we'll be biking out to the glacier and then back to UAS for the sprint, back to Tea Harbor for the Olympic, and all the way out to Sunshine Cove for our long format. And then people will be doing their runs on a combination of Glacier Highway, Auk Lake Trail, and the Black Bear Trail.
Let's talk about how it kind of unfolds. So whether you're, so if you're enrolled in sprint, tell me about the distances involved in the sprint.
Yep. So sprint is 750 meter swim. So roughly swimming from the boat dock at UAS to the boat launch at the Rotary Park there.
Okay.
And that is followed by a roughly 12, 13 mile bike ride out to the glacier and back, and then a 5K run.
Okay. So that sounds like plenty for me, but if you want more, you can go Olympic.
Yep, you can go Olympic. This will be the third year that we have a Olympic race distance, and that is a 1,500 meter swim. So kind of out across Auk Lake and then come back to the buoy line and swim to the boat launch. And then for the bike, instead of turning back in at UAS, they head out the road to the second pullout at Tea Harbor. We'll turn around there and come back for a total of about 40 kilometers, about 24, 25 miles. And then they do a 10K route that will take them onto Black Bear Trail and then kind of around that hill that sits between Black Bear Trail and Auk Lake.
Okay, and then Olympic to finish it up. Or sorry, the long to finish it up. So Olympic's kind of the middle distance one, and long is long kind of what we think of as like the big triathlon distances?
Yes. Yeah. Yep. So the comparable would be like the Ironman 70.3 distance, and for our long, it's 1,900 meters, which is the USA Triathlon standard distance for that. And then it goes the same route on the bike as everybody else, but then it continues out to Sunshine Cove. Turn around at Sunshine Cove, come back for a total of 90 kilometers or 56 miles of biking.
Okay.
And then that wraps up with a half marathon run distance, which for us is going to wind up being a two-lap system.
Okay. So that's, well, so that's cool. That sounds intimidating, but there's people who can do it and knock it out and have been training and ready to go for that. That's really cool. Tell me a little bit about, and this is of course what you're living in, but a little bit about the logistics of how do you schedule the starts? How do you make sure that you've got people stationed and, you know, all that stuff? So is everyone start swimming at once or is that staggered?
We have a staggered start for the swim, and that's just to facilitate everybody kind of getting out of the water at the same time. It helps us with the water safety aspect. It helps us with timing the bike ride out so that nobody is leaving on a bike and then running into runners who are coming back based on the different distances. And if we had anybody who was absolutely blistering quick in the sprint distance.
I see. Okay. And then, as an organizer, what are some of the key things that you're really concentrating on? Safety is obviously your number one concern.
Safety is huge.
And so, what are the areas there that you really get most concerned with, or what are the areas there where you really build out your kind of force for dealing with that? I'm
absolutely
sure on the lake, for instance, you've got lots of people out on the lake.
Water safety is, historically, it's where the worst case scenarios can play out. But we are working with getting certified lifeguards through the community pools. We are also working with CCFR's volunteer water rescue team. We'll have coordination meetings for that. We have Guardian Flight is going to have their ambulance to assist with any volume, which was above what CCFR is able to provide. CCFR is also planning on having some additional staff on and ideally an additional ambulance to help us kind of cover further out the road as the day progresses.
Do you have certain criteria or people have to kind of like demonstrate that they're able to swim well or that kind of thing? Or is it just you're taking people as hey, if you're going to sign up for this, you have to be ready.
Yep. You have to be ready. You have to have a wetsuit. That is one requirement. Auk Lake does not really, that surface temperature never goes into the, or has not historically gone into the wetsuits prohibited temperature range. So we just say wetsuits are required. This year, one thing that we
I see. So if water temperature is warm,
correct,
at a certain point, they'll actually say wetsuits are prohibited.
Correct.
In those races.
But I believe that's around like 78 to 80 degrees.
Yeah, we're not, especially 6:30 in the morning. We're not going to Right. So wetsuits are required there.
Yep.
And then, you know, functionally operating bicycles are required, that sort of thing.
I'm sure. Yeah, and we have some bike assistance, both from Juno Bike Doctor and Cycle Alaska. A lot of our staff, our board are also pretty familiar with it. And there's some safety aspects that kind of just get double checked on people's bikes, and some basic equipment and stuff is available there to help people tune up as well.
Yeah. And then running sort of self-explanatory. Are there areas of the race when are you a triathlete yourself?
I am a triathlete. The hardest part of this for me is doing a lot of planning and getting really excited about the race, but I'm going to be largely stationary answering phones or radios or answering questions day of.
Right. It's the least fun race that you'll participate in. it's fun to do it. I mean, it's incredible that that's what I was going to get at next. It's incredible the amount of logistic getting this all together and then having it all culminate on one day. And how many volunteers do you typically get? And I'm sure you're still looking.
So we have the number of volunteers that we've historically had, and then we have what we need this year. Uh-huh. And what we need this year is much higher.
Because of the long distance.
Correct.
Okay.
Yep. So it's just a longer day. And so we've kept all of the volunteer blocks manageably short. If people want to sign up for multiple volunteer roles, that is excellent. And we encourage that. But we also wanted to keep it simple. So if you have other plans for your day, thank you so much for coming for the 2-hour time block. And, you know, we'll say thank you with T-shirts, food, drinks, and wish you the best for the rest of your weekend.
But if people are into it and they want to stick around and continue to volunteer, that's great, too.
Yes. Yeah. And that would be ideal. We're hoping for a very fun finish to the race this year with the UAS Plaza. We have Forno Rosso pizza truck is going to be there. And then we are also
working. Delicious pizza, by the way. So good.
Yes.
Yes. Very good choice.
And we're also going to have a beer garden this year with Forbidden Peak and Devil's Club supporting us in that.
All right.
And then there will also be gluten-free and non-alcoholic and soda options as well.
Okay, really cool. All those pizzas are going to fly, man. Hungry triathletes, done with the race. Pizza sounds pretty good, I would think. Yep. And all their supporters. Because everyone who's a triathlete, for the most part, they've all got family and friends and things like that coming out to cheer them on.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Really cool. Well, that's so awesome that it sounds like basically at the end of it, it's a party. Right.
That's the goal. Yeah. That's definitely
right,
the goal.
Right. Yeah. And you'll be ready to have a pizza, I'm sure, but yourself and the other organizers as well. So tell me a little bit about this. There's a couple of things. One I want to know about is registration. Can people still register and how do they go about doing that?
Yes, people can absolutely still register. Our website is aukmantri.com, and links for both registration and our volunteer page with a complete list of what we're looking for. Both of those registration links are super easy to find on our website. And we are open, you know, even up until the day before.
Okay.
The only requirement for registration is that you show up for the race meeting the night before the race. So registration will effectively end Friday afternoon, Saturday morning-ish.
Okay. All right. Sounds good. Now, this is such a beautiful, amazing area to conduct a race like this. Were there certain themes or certain things you were trying to accentuate with the routing or with how you developed the course this year?
So first was safety. Having been on the planning committee for when Ironman came to town, having participated in that event, and then also hearing from friends who both manage traffic for JPD or were stuck in the traffic jam on Back Loop Road, doing this event, we wanted to make sure that there were minimal road crossings and that if at all possible, we just didn't have runners crossing the road. And so we wound up identifying the Black Bear Trail as a preferred route for our course. And it actually creates a really wonderful 10K route that we can then use for the Olympic distance and modify it slightly for the longer distance for the two lap system. And unfortunately, that trail was in pretty rough shape. So we contacted Trail Mix, and fortunately, they were already working with Team Rubicon and Trout Unlimited to improve that trail. So we have been able to support them with additional bodies on trail maintenance days.
Great. And has got anything coming up for people to get involved there and helping maintain that trail?
Yep. We were supposed to do one actually tomorrow, but due to the storm that's coming through, that has been postponed to the 27th.
Okay.
So cool. 27th of July. And you can check our Facebook page for Aukman, or you can check Trail Mix's calendar as well.
When you're designing these courses, are there sort of standards that you follow about things like altitude gain, that kind of stuff, or is it just kind of freeform?
It's pretty freeform, which is they keep it that way. USA Triathlon, who's our sanctioning body, they keep it that way to allow for variety, but also recognizing that different communities have different demands. And then otherwise, when it comes to designing it, you kind of have to gauge, do we want this to be a more accessible race that is not intimidating, or do we want this to be one of those super intimidating events where people are like, oh man, I did it. I had X number of, you know, I had 3,000-4,000 feet of elevation gain in my bike ride and another 2,000 in the run.
Right. I mean, that's the thing. Is it like incredibly aspirational, like one of those ones that's like known as a really tough one, or is it kind of, so where did you fall, do you think, in that range?
I think what makes our event a little bit, so first of all, we're utilizing the trail system in Juneau, and Juneau has great trails. So utilizing that trail system, it keeps the impact on people's bodies a little bit lower, which is nice, as opposed to like a straightforward, you're just pavement, pounding on
asphalt
pain. Right, yep, exactly. Right. So you get a little bit of a reprieve in that sense, but it's also a slightly slower course because of that. But for us, it's roughly a third gravel trail, and then the rest is a mix of asphalt trail, concrete, that type of stuff.
Because of that variation for triathletes who are serious triathletes, how do they judge their performance and times and things like that? You know, are there golden standards of times that are adjusted because of trails and because of conditions?
I think for us, especially locally, it's more about just being able to come out and do the event, which is what is more exciting for me. And what's been very evident from our community is the people who just started doing triathlon at the sprint distance a year or two ago, and then they did the Olympic. And right, they felt like, wow, that was comfortable. I want to do that faster. Or maybe they want to jump up to the long.
Yeah, very cool.
And so kind of allowing for that type of progression is more what it's about. But it's all course dependent, because you could have super challenging courses or you could have flat as a pancake courses. And there's even some courses out there that have a net negative elevation.
Oh, gain. Yeah. Oh, that's interesting.
So an elevation drop over the extent of the course.
Yeah. What kind of weather do you hope for as a triathlete
and
versus as an organizer or as both?
I think as both, you know, especially for us here in Juneau, if it's too hot, that creates a challenge for locals. But if it's too cold, that can create some safety hazards as well. But I'd say, you know, 65, partly cloudy, nice dynamic clouds and pretty views out Lynn Canal
maybe
when you go out the road.
Maybe one little shower somewhere.
Yeah, but then maybe on the run.
Yeah, we're on the run part.
Maybe right? Just when you're kind of going through the rainforest and you get that little bit of rain.
We'll see if we can order that up for August 4th. We'll order up that kind of weather for you. We'll
That'd
see
be what, awesome.
Yeah, I'll talk to Noah about that. We'll
Perfect.
See if we can arrange for you. Yeah. Well, very cool. Just to recap, it's happening August 4th. It's the Aukman Triathlon. We're all, of course, familiar with that as a long-standing tradition here in Juneau. Starts at 6 a.m. and it's going to about 4 p.m. Does it have a kind of real shutoff date at 4 p.m. or do people keep trickling in, or how does that work?
We might have some people trickling in, but for the most part, our times are pretty generous and they're based around historical performance and kind of what we expect for the course.
Right. And you can sign up if you're interested in this. You can sign up at a sprint, Olympic, or long distance level. And of course, you can also contact aukmantri@gmail.com. That's aukmantri@gmail.com to volunteer and to find out more information about this. Is there a website as well that people can check out?
Yep, aukmantri.com.
Okay, aukmantri.com is a place to find out more information. Really cool that you're getting in Devil's Club and a Forbidden Peak to do a beer garden, and Forno Rosso is going to supply the pizza, and that's all happening at the UAS Plaza, which is the finish line.
That is correct, yeah. And that's also the transition area, so it's a really good place to watch the event from if you're coming.
So that's transition area, meaning getting on the bikes, getting off the bikes. Area.
Kind exactly. Of, yeah, yep. Right. Coming from the swim, going out on the bikes, coming back on the bikes, going out on the run, and then into the finish line.
Yeah. As someone, how long have you done triathlons yourself?
I've been doing triathlons since 2006.
How old were you when you started?
I was in college. I want to say 20.
Did you come from a background of like being a really strong swimmer or runner or biker, or did you?
No, I didn't even start running until college.
Oh, okay. Yeah. So you just got interested in it and picked it up and.
Yep. Total accident. Was working at the YMCA of the Rockies for a summer gig, and they said, hey, we're doing this event. You have a bike. And so I just was like, yeah, sure. I know how to swim and I'll go bike, and I know how to run sort of. So
yeah, right. Well, that's really cool. And that just shows you that you don't have to be an expert in any one field to get into it and to kind of make it a longstanding, even lifelong ambition and something that you participate in for many years.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Very cool. Well, Daniel, thanks so much for talking to us again. It's the Aukman Triathlon. It's happening August 4th. You can still register and you can still volunteer. You can write them at aukmantri@gmail.com or go to aukmantri.com, and that's auk with the E on it. So AUKEMANTRI is the Aukman Tri for either Gmail, or you can go and check them out at aukman.com. Daniel, thanks so much for coming in and talking to us about it. Have a great race. It's going to be a lot of fun. I'm sure we'll hear more about it as we head up towards August 4th.
Thank you very
All
much.
Right, thanks.
You're listening to KTOO's Tlingit Word of the Week. This week's word comes from the late Kahuan'ish George Davis. The word this week is seek.
Seek.
That means black bear. And let's hear a sentence.
Seek.
The black bear had cubs. Let's hear it again.
Seek.
Black bear. Ganesh Jeesh to Hune Lance Twitchell, Gold Belt Heritage Foundation, and the University of Alaska Southeast for this audio.
Kahuan'ish George Davis was Tukdain Tan and the child of a Tsagwe Di man. He grew up in Qiq, Cake, Alaska, and learned to speak well because he would always bring traditional foods to the elders there. As someone who fished a lot and spent time on the land, he knew Tlingit place names all over the area, and he learned many stories and advanced ways of speaking.
Tune in next week for another Tlingit Word of the Week from KTOO.
You're listening to Juneau Afternoon from Studio 2K at KTOO. I'm your host, Andy Klein. Joining me now from the Last Chance Mining Museum and the Juneau Historical Society. It is Renee Hughes. Renee, thanks so much for coming in.
Well, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. And we just we thought, well, it would be really fun to check in with the Last Chance Mining Museum and hear more about the Historical Society, and just find out, like, how's it going in the summer? And are people finding their way to the Last Chance Mining Museum?
Well, people are finding their way to the museum. I have a wonderful group of volunteers up there that have been doing great, and they love sharing Juneau's history with our locals, with family and friends, visitors in town, as well as a few cruise ship people that managed to escape downtown and want to get out and just enjoy being what we all love Alaska for.
Find their way all the way up Basin Road and get over the bridge.
Go over the bridge, through the woods, and up the hill to our house. And right.
So tell me about that. How does that work? Is you don't get as many cruise ship passenger type traffic as maybe independent travelers. Is that right?
We're not on the bus system, and we're not associated with a cruise line. So a lot of people come up with a cab and then just walk up the hill. And if they need a ride back, it's easy enough to call a cab.
Well, it's downhill from there, too.
It's a mile and a half downhill, so it's a lot easier.
Right. Well, that's really cool. I mean, I've been, you know, I have to admit, it's been a few years since I've been to the Last Chance Mining Museum. It was so amazing to see this historic equipment and all of the incredible artifacts and all of the history, along with all the artifacts that's inside that building. Really so cool. But it's kind of interesting because I think as a local, you know, you get especially in the off season, you get to that bridge and the fence is down and you're like, well, I don't know. Can we go in here? So what are the times that the museum's open?
Well, COVID limited our hours, and so that reduced our number of volunteers. Mm-hmm. So we kind of scaled back a little bit, but we're getting back up there. So we're open Thursday through Monday from 2 to 5 every day, and we only charge $5 admission, so it's a nice little afternoon to get away and enjoy the fresh air and just being outside.
And such an integral part of the history of Juneau and Alaska in general, that kind of whole era that the Mining Museum represents.
There's so much of Juneau's history that is now overgrown and has disappeared that it's nice to be able to have something that is a big part of why Juneau is where it is and our history and a big part of Juneau.
Yeah. Now, the Historic Society, and that's, you can go and find out more at JuneauHistory.org, but the Historical Society also operates Sentinel Lighthouse.
Yes.
So tell me about that operation.
Well, the Historic Society is the umbrella operation that I've does the Mining Museum and the Sentinel Island Lighthouse. We now offer tours that go out there every day, and you get off the boat and get onto the island. So it includes a little whale watching and the history of our maritime culture of Juneau and the area. Because the gold rush is the reason that a lot of the lighthouses were built. They kind of run hand in hand together because there were so many gold seekers traveling the inside passage during the gold rush that shipwrecks frequently happened.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I mean, and of course, the waters and the weather is treacherous. It can be here in Southeast Alaska. So that's a bad combination if you don't have lighthouses.
And Sentinel Island is where the Princess Sophia went aground right north of there, just a little bit on Vanderbilt Reef. Right. So that was a big, significant situation that happened in our history.
Yeah, terrible tragedy. Yeah.
But many of the rescue boats that were trying to get the people were harboring at the lighthouse as protection because the storm was so bad.
Oh, I see. Oh, that's interesting. Now, what else does the society do? It runs those two operations, but it also does publications and things?
We publish a newsletter, which we are celebrating. We have some new panels up at the museum. We've got 40 years of being able to publish this, and it's won awards from the state and throughout around, and have covered a lot of interesting history that has happened in Juneau, the Soapbox Derby that happened around the 4th of July.
Yeah, that kind of in the Flats area or that in
used
that
to happen up near the governor's house down that big hill.
Why can't we get that going again? That seems like they have a great one over in Douglas now, so we don't want to steal the thunder from Douglas, but
and it's not quite as dangerous as it used to be when the little children were anymore, jumping on these things roaring down the street.
This was another time when we didn't, we kids were tougher, I think.
Well, we didn't have as many.
yeah. Well, it's good that all the safety stuff is good. We want to protect our children. That's all great. But and you had mentioned that actually that some of your publications had just been recognized.
The newsletter's been recognized. We won a state press award, which was pretty exciting. And so we featured some of the newsletters in some new panels up at the museum. And we're pretty excited that it's done so well. And you can download it at our website, junohistory.org. We charge $5. And there's some interesting history back there.
Wow, that's really cool. Now, you mentioned that the Last Chance Mining Museum kind of runs on volunteer power.
Correct.
So how can people get what sort of volunteers do you look for? And how can people get involved in maybe trying to volunteer there?
I love volunteers. And anybody who wants to call me or reach out to me through junohistory.org or call me personally at the museum. And I would love to chat with you and have you come and spend a few hours sharing some of our history with visitors.
Yeah, what sort of things do your volunteers do?
Oh, they meet and greet and talk to the people and just share our local color and history.
If they have, maybe they're a part of history in their own unique way as well.
Well, some of them have shared some pretty exciting stories that they've experienced in time.
Yeah. I know that there's a lot of people that are really interested in exploring the ruins. You know, there's still, as you said, there's a lot of
train tracks are still up there.
Still
and
around.
Some of the mining cars are up there. So there's a lot of things to explore. We call it a historical park. So there's a lot to see. Anybody can pan for gold up there any time of day. So the creek is always open.
And there's still a little gold left in Gold Creek?
There's always gold in Creek.
Okay. I know. I've tried it one time up there. I don't think I had the right technique.
Well, Mother Nature brings it down every day.
Well, then it's on me. I need to go back up there and do that. Well, Renee Hughes with the Juno Historical Society, it's so interesting to talk to you and great to talk to you about what's happening both at the Last Chance Mining Museum and also really interesting to know about how Sentinel Island is also. If people want to get on a tour out of Sentinel Island, how do they go about doing that?
Juno Lighthouse Tours is the contact that you go through to get on that tour.
Juno Lighthouse Tours.
Mm-hmm.
And then do you know about how long that takes? Is it like a four-hour thing?
It's usually like a three-hour tour because it includes a whale-watching trip as well as a visit to the tower.
Yeah, very cool. Wow. So that's such a fun thing to think about, getting out to Sentinel Lighthouse for
Lot of people that really enjoy lighthouses and appreciate the aid to navigation that it plays when you're out on the water.
And it's a part of our history as much as many of the other historical artifacts are. They're kind of working artifacts that are part of the history of
it. Is still an aid to navigation, so the light usually is on.
Yeah. Okay.
If it's not, the Coast Guard gets a phone call.
Okay. Well, that's great to hear. Well, Renee, thanks so much for coming in, letting us know what's happening. Again, it's the Last Chance Mining Museum. It's open from 2 to 5 Thursday through Monday. And then you can also go to the Lighthouse.
Juno Lighthouse Tours.
Juno Lighthouse Tours. If you're interested in a tour of the Sentinel Island, or if you have someone coming into town, friends or family coming into town, what a great afternoon or morning to spend going to the Sentinel Island Lighthouse as well.
And if you want to rent it overnight, we do allow that and have that available as well.
Also, can you catch a ride with you, and then you would just offload there? And
then you can stay for a day or two or three if you want.
Can stay out there at once, you know?
Well, we have sleeping accommodations for quite a few, you know, not a whole lot, but about 4 or 5 can comfortably sleep out there.
Oh, wow. Okay. Wow, that's a fun idea.
It is a great idea.
Through the lighthouse tours, they can tell you what days are available for overnighting?
Oh, they can call me you can reach me through the museum.
Mm-hmm. Okay, wow, that's great. Do you know offhand how much one of those tours costs? I know it's $5 to do the Last Chance Basin Museum, but
I think it's about $190 round trip.
$190 a person.
And that includes the whale watching trip.
Oh, really good. All right. Well, Renee, thanks so much for letting us know about that. It's really fun to hear about these little hidden gems. Sometimes
we'd
overlook these things when we're Junoites and we don't think about this great resources that we have. It's Renee Hughes. She's with Last Chance Mining Museum and the Juno Historical Society. And you can go to junohistory.org to find out more information about it. Renee, thanks so much.
Thank you for having me.
Okay. You're listening to Juno Afternoon from Studio 2K here at KTOO. I'm your host, Andy Klein, and with me now are actors that are all involved in Pride and Prejudice, which is having its closing weekend at the Noyes Pavilion this weekend. And it's Brian Crowder, a local Junoite. Many people must know Brian who are listening right now. Matthew Myrick is here, who's a cast who's now in grad school over at Brown University. So that's really exciting. And also Paul Schweigert is from Anchorage, but right now you're kind of living in L.A. and
have been for a little bit.
And also, you know, when a play calls, you go.
That's right. Get the call and you roll.
You roll.
That's what happens.
Let's roll out. There's acting to be done.
Must be handled.
Well, it's great to have you all in the studio. And first of all, I just want to talk a little bit about the experience of doing Pride and Prejudice and all of the different sets and area, you know, the locations that you're doing it in. Matthew, I'll just ask you first, you know, is that an experience you've had before doing plays in place like that and using different areas?
No, I've always been, most of my shows have been pretty like, we're doing this in one space. We have everything set up. And you get really used to one spot. So this has put us on our feet a lot, kept us on our toes, always having to know what minor changes about each bass, the sound is different, you know, where can you move? That's been...
It's such an interesting thing because it's a very, in a way, it's a very traditional play. It's a, you know, it's something we're very familiar with, but in this very, presented in this very non-traditional way.
And it's got a lot, like, I mean, it's got a lot of baggage, you know, a lot of people have read the book. They have an expectation.
They want Colin Firth. Lines. They want, yeah.
Yeah, right? I know for sure. You know, it's my girlfriend's favorite movie. And so there's a lot behind it.
And this particular adaptation of it is unique because it updates the play in a one, the play, the story, the novel in a wonderful way. It allows for a lot more comedy, which is very helpful with an audience, a live audience.
I think Florilino being involved, he's got a really playful comic mind in a lot of ways. So I can see him wanting to go in that direction.
Yeah.
Yeah.
One of the fun things about doing it in the new spaces has been doing the hour before, because we get to the new space and we essentially reblock the play. Well, not reblock. We're kind of on this, like you said, a postage stamp. Mm-hmm. So we know where we're going, but it's fun because we kind of do the play in quick time in the hour we're there. And so we get to see everybody just kind of their own interpretations of how the characters are and just this kind of fast paced version that we run for ourselves.
You've almost got to do a new dress every location.
You have to adapt to the parameters of the space. If they're like a treadwheel, we were in that tight inside rectangle and there were pillars that were part of the set and windows that were open, and we don't have that in most of the other spaces. So you have to adapt to where you're doing certain bits of blocking and business.
And I would think that when you're doing this, you know, there's certain cues you almost take from the environment, right? From the surroundings. And all of a sudden you're not in that environment anymore. I can imagine that throwing you off a little bit.
It also creates some great places for like moments to play, because we didn't always have doors that we could swing open. Or sometimes, you know, there are no walls and it's like, what can we do with that? And so honestly, you come to the show tonight, you'll be seeing stuff for the first time with us.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Right. Absolutely. You're figuring it out as it goes a little
bit. Fresh every night. Yeah.
Brian, since you're a local, what are the different locations that you guys played in here for Pride and Prejudice?
Well, we did Treadwell. We did the Pioneer Home, Riverview Senior Living, SHI Downtown, which was very interesting downtown with all the noises from the boats.
That outdoor
and the planes
in the Sea Alaska kind of area. I see. Yeah, the plaza. Wow.
That was maybe one of the hardest places to perform, I think.
Because there's cars going by.
And groups of people walking by and noises, people yelling.
Yeah.
And so it was probably one of the hardest places to just keep the concentration going throughout the entire
time. I can imagine people just like, is that a play happening over there? You know, like in the middle of the scene. Right?
Yeah, you never know what's going to happen at some of the locations. And that one especially was kind of a little bit wild because it's just so exposed and so open and so many people around everywhere.
Right.
Whereas a lot of the other places we performed, at least we kind of know that we kind of have this area where it's like, oh, okay, it's kind of contained and we can kind of know that we aren't going to, you know, have planes taking off right next to us and trying to yell over them. So,
And we were at the Arboretum.
Yeah. The Arboretum.
That's a cool one. I mean, that's a neat, I think Florilino has done that a few times. That's a kind of a premier spot that he likes to go to. And
it's so beautiful. Out there.
Yeah.
Stunning. Gorgeous.
And I can imagine that some plays really play well to this garden atmosphere, this beautiful outdoor garden
atmosphere. And this one does.
Right.
And as a an Alaskan and a fisherman. I just have to tell this anecdote. When we were performing at the Arboretum, there were all these salmon down in the water that were jumping out and slapping the water. And so I was constantly triggered like fish, 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 yeah, right.
You know, wet a line
during the play.
Right. And as a first timer in Alaska, like from day one until like still I'm blown away by all the natural beauty. So being able to do what I love in the middle of that was just incredible.
Did you have weather experiences as a part of this, or did the weather kind of hold pretty much for you? The
weather's been nice.
Yeah. Cooperated. It's been great.
That's cool. Sometimes.
But yeah. Whatever. Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about just your background. Brian, you're back.
Yeah,
you've come back. It's been a little while. 4 years. COVID knocked a lot of us out of our normal routines. It sounds like it got you out of the routine of doing plays. And we're so used to seeing you in a lot of productions at Perseverance through the years.
It's great to be back. Yeah, it's been a little while. And I honestly was a little scared to dip my toe back in. I wasn't exactly sure how quickly it would come back and how long it would take to de-rust. Right. Yeah, it's been a lot. But honestly, kind of fell back into it pretty naturally, and it's been a great experience. I couldn't have asked to be working with more talented and amazing individuals in this cast.
Yeah.
And it's been it's been my pleasure.
Do you have kind of aspirations more of like trying to, I don't know what you're doing for work now and stuff.
I'm working over at PT right now.
Yeah. Okay.
Doing some bookkeeping.
Okay.
But I'm just enjoying the time right now that I have, and we'll see what happens in the future. But I've definitely forgot how much I missed it.
Yeah.
And I'm starting to realize how much I missed it. So,
Matthew, you're in grad school. Are you in grad school doing theater?
Yeah, for theater.
So you got big aspirations. Right? This is it.
No, yeah, I want to pay the bills with it. You know?
That's what I'm getting at. It's such an amazing thing for the people who figure out that magic combination of actually being able to pay the bills with the art that they do.
Yeah, and like going through grad school has really just kind of shown the avenue for that, but also just gives me a chance to grow. Because I've been doing this since I was like, shout out to my mom, Carolyn Myrick. She put me on stage.
Shout out to all the moms.
I was 4 years old and she put me on stage and I was like, I guess I'm doing this for the rest of my life. Because I just loved it.
I loved it.
It's so
right.
much fun.
Yeah.
And, you know, it's a way I can solve problems. I love it.
Yeah. And Paul, I know you've known Boston for years and years.
Since the dark ages.
And you've played in and out of doing many, many plays throughout the years. You just kind of work it out through your schedule to get involved in plays.
I'm a classic gigger. I try not to hold down a regular job. So I go from gig to gig as best I can. And I tie it up in between. When I do work as an actor, most of my work is in live theater. I've done a minuscule amount of on-camera work, which isn't worth mentioning today. But I also teach and do residencies and workshops, mainly focusing on Shakespeare.
Yeah, I heard you did one up in Nome.
Right. I just recently did 2.5 weeks in Nome. It was a repeat performance. I was up there about 8 years ago, and I did a Shakespeare residency with 60 middle school.
So you kind of developed a little bit of a curriculum that you can let people know this is what I can bring to your
community, and group. I'm hoping to. It's been a while since the last time I had that gig, but I'm hoping to parlay that into a little more regular work teaching. I'm going to explore possibly some substitute teaching this fall where I'm currently residing. But I'm hoping to keep my feet on the boards. This is my first time on stage, actually, since the last time I was here in Juneau 9 years ago.
Oh, wow.
Boston was directing a production at Perseverance called Rush at Everlasting. And I had to come in that circumstance to replace an actor last minute.
I see. Yeah. Yeah. Well, so fascinating just to hear the different kind of tracks that people are on when you talk to artists and all different kinds of fields, musicians or visual artists or any kind of artist. It's always fascinating to hear where you are in your journey, what's how you've kind of cobbled it together in a way. You know, it seems like that's the big part of how this all goes. Matthew, do you have a next thing lined up that you're next going to, or you got school?
Yeah, I'm going back to school. We're doing our Shakespeare reps. Actually, I'm kind of doing full circle. Like I said, I was 4 years old. I did Midsummer Night's Dream. But I'm doing Midsummer Night again for our Shakespeare reps at Brown Trinity.
Very cool.
In Rhode Island.
And Brian, you're just going back to PT, working the books?
Yeah, we'll see what happens. There might be something coming up afterwards.
Very cool.
We'll see. Stay tuned.
Well, we'll see you again here in Juneau on the stage because, your talent can't be held back. and that's very cool. Also, Paul, just to hear that you're looking to kind of move in that direction of maybe doing the teaching, maybe trying to work in more workshops
I'm hoping to get back to Nome again this next year to some other. I love taking it out into the remote communities. I think that's very valuable.
Very cool. Well, maybe there's an opportunity in Juneau in the future as well for something like that. That'd be very cool to hear.
That'd be awesome.
Well, Brian, Matthew, and Paul, thanks so much for coming in again. It's Pride and Prejudice. It's closing weekend. It's happening at the Noyes Pavilion. Can you tell me just real quick times? And are you performing tonight?
We are performing.
Yeah.
7 o'clock.
O'clock. And it's always more sunny in the valley. It's always clearer.
That's right.
So don't be afraid if you're in downtown or in Douglas.
It's covered. It's Noyes Pavilion.
Do they need to bring their own chairs?
Please bring your own chairs. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
Bring your own chairs.
7 today, 7 tomorrow, and 3 on Sunday, right?
Yes. Yeah. And bring your friends and their chairs.
All right. Thanks very much to all of you for coming
Thanks
in.
A lot.
And that's it for Juneau Afternoon for today. I'm Andy Klein. Thanks so much for joining us.